One, two, three, Master, welcome to the Man Cave, where joining me tonight to record Diz Dad's podcast to number 262 for January 25th, 2015, live are CJ Fergola.
Hey, guys.
David Jort.
Hey, everybody.
And Jeff Swearingen.
Good evening.
Now, tonight on the podcast, we're talking about day trips to Walt Disney World, working within this new FastPass Plus system. And it comes up when, people are visiting for a day. It's part of a bigger trip. We haven't spent a lot of time talking about it, and there are some unique strategies that would help make that a little more enjoyable and a little less stressful. But before we get to that, I do need to thank our podcast sponsor, Fairytale Journeys, an authorized Disney travel planner. Next time your family's considering a Walt Disney World, Disneyland, Disney Cruise Line, even Universal or some other themed entertainment destination, even an all-inclusive vacation somewhere in the South when it's nice and cold, consider working with a Fairytale Journeys travel agent. They'd love to take the detail and the stress and the not fun stuff about taking a great family vacation off of your shoulders and let you focus on the fun. You can check them out at fairytalejourneys.com. Okay, gentlemen. A few things we need to touch on real quick before we get into our main topic. I've had some questions about the Diz Dads polo shirts. I know Coy there in the chat room had been asking about them. A couple other people had. And we still never got to a full pre-order. But I know people have been waiting a long time, and frankly, you know, I appreciate your patience. You've waited long enough. I'm going to go ahead and get together what I need to do to go ahead and make an order, which means I'll have a few extra shirts that I'll, you know, be trying to sell when we're all done. But in the meantime, I'm going to place this order at the end of this month, just because for bookkeeping reasons, I got to kind of look and see, you know, what's going on with my personal cash flow before I do that. So if you still want to order one of those shirts, we've got them available in four colors, a range of sizes. Go ahead and get your orders in. Go to dizdads.com, go to the swag shop, and there's a pull down for the shirt order form. Fill out the form, submit your PayPal, and, you know, I'm going to go ahead and get that order in at the end of this month, and so we'll get them turned around as soon as you can. So that's the shirts. The other topic, the cruise. You know, the Diz Dad's Dream Cruise departing June 22nd, 2014 is coming up. If you've been following the blog, you may have noticed that I posted, I guess about a week ago, that I'd reshopped all our rates. And sure enough, booking at the release date on that cruise made a big difference. None of us could sail for any cheaper than we booked on that launch date. There are still some staterooms available on the cruise. So if you want to join us, get in touch with me. You can email me. There's still the form up on the website that you can fill out. But either way, the sooner the better, because I know the cruise is filling up. I noticed when I searched that there's only one stateroom on the entire ship that's still open if you're sailing with a family of four. So if you want to book the Royal Suite on the Disney Dream, hey, that would be terrific. I'd love to help you with that. Otherwise, unfortunately, there aren't any staterooms that accommodate a family of four at this point on that sailing. There is, however, some availability for families of three or for couples if somebody wanted to travel in pairs, or if you had guys, you know, traveling solo looking for roommates, that kind of thing. There is some availability still in those areas. Finally, and this is a request I'll probably repeat at the end of the show too. If you could just take a moment, and if you're, you know, listening to the show, enjoying the show, head over to iTunes the next time you get a chance and leave a review for the podcast. I'd really appreciate it. I happened to glance at it over the weekend, and the last review that we got for the show was from back in July. and having fresh reviews is one of the things that's really helpful for people who are searching for podcasts in iTunes. Shows that have recent reviews get bumped to the top of their search results. So if you could stop by, give us a review, tell people what you think about it. It does help us reach some new people and help new people find us. So, all right, enough of my rambling. On to the panel here, who are the real experts on these issues. But we're going to talk now about these day trips and working the system, so to speak, as it exists now at Walt Disney World when you're just there for the day. And I want to start by turning to Jeff Swearingen because he's got a little bit of a news update for us. So I want to take advantage of that before I forget. So, Jeff, you were mentioning right before we went live that you'd been in the Japan Pavilion and you wanted to update us on some new happenings there.
Not the Japan Pavilion, the Peter Pan.
Oh, Peter right. Pan in the queue.
Yes. Yeah, I don't know this.
So tell us about the
queue over in the Japan Pavilion, but if there is, we'll find it eventually. The queue is fully open today. I went through, and I'm not big on these interactive queues, but this I was very pleasantly surprised by this. It will keep your attention if you're stuck in a 70-minute wait, which that's the goal of those queues, and it is incredibly well done. Once you get inside the building where the old restrooms are, you'll walk past a few paintings of Neverland, and then you'll walk into the Darling's house, and you'll go into the bedroom, and Tinkerbell is flying all over the place, knocking things around, opening trunks. There are a couple places where Peter Pan's shadow will play with you as you walk by. And it's not something I would say you should do every single time you go on the ride, but if you're in the situation where you do have some time to kill and you want to ride Peter Pan, go for the queue. It's worth going through at least once.
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned that because that's kind of a nice segue into this whole topic of dealing with Walt Disney World. For on a day trip, because I guess the first thing we should do maybe is review a little bit the things that make a day trip a little different. Obviously, the biggest thing is that if you're just showing up for the day and so you don't have a hotel room on property, you're not taking advantage of that 60-day advance booking window. You can still book in advance up to 30 days in advance if you've got your tickets already purchased and you've already got a My Disney Experience account. So you still do have some FastPass Plus opportunities, but some of the more popular FastPass Plus attractions, like Peter Pan, occasionally there will be issues, especially during the busiest times of the year, with getting a FastPass Plus reservation at the time that you are most interested in. So I'm going to ask CJ to kind of get us started because he's become a bit of a pro at enjoying Walt Disney World without, doing a lot of advance reservations and a lot of touring plan stuff. He's got his own approach, and I think that we could learn a little something from it. So CJ, talk to us a little bit about how you handle, the kind of show up to Walt Disney World for the day and enjoy the parks, kind of day.
One word: early. you get there at road drop, and even if there are lines and you don't have fast passes, you do have the opportunity to beat everybody else to the park. If you show up at noon and try to get on Peter Pan, you're looking at a pretty long wait. A few other things that I do is, you know, there is an opportunity when you get there to get fast passes. And I've actually done that. I've gone to one of the kiosks and have been able to sign up for things. Of course, you're not going to do Toy Story. You're not going to get, you know, the most popular attractions. You know, you're not going to get to see Elsa and Anna, but unless you stand in line. But you get there early. You take advantage of the kiosks, and you can still have a pretty good trip.
Okay, sure. Now, David, why don't you expand on that a little bit? What are some strategies that you use overall to, you know, enjoy the parks when you're just showing up for the day?
Well, I have to second CJ. When if you're going and you don't have anything booked ahead of time, you need to be there pre-rope drop with some semblance of a plan. I think that's – even though it is a day trip, you kind of need to know what you want to accomplish that day. Be it, okay, well, today we're just going to ride all the mountains. It's Anna or bust, and then you're probably screwed. But getting there early is key. Having a plan is key. Like CJ said, getting what fast passes you can once you get there. Kind of, and I know I've hit on this in the past and maybe the future, depending on dates. Using FastPass Plus in a rolling fashion, where when you get into the meat of the day, for those mid-level rides, Jungle Cruise, Winnie the Pooh, stuff like that, where it might be a 20, 30, 40-minute wait, but there's a FastPass Plus available 5 minutes from right now. When you're in the park, using those is seriously going to save you some time. So,
sure, yeah, I've actually got done that strategy where, you know, I'm not going to see Elsa, but I'm not going to wait 30 minutes for Jungle Cruise. You know, and if I wait 15 minutes, I can get on in 5, and I can do other things. You know. You know, waiting for those 15 minutes. It's a great strategy.
Right, and that's what I know. I was standing this last trip, and it wasn't a day trip or anything. We were standing at Jungle Cruise. We were about to get on it. It was a 25-minute line, and there's FastPass kiosks right there. And I just walked over, got on one of those, and there was a FastPass for literally right now for Jungle Cruise. So we didn't have to wait that 25 minutes. And then we came off a Jungle Cruise, went right back to that kiosk because we were going to go to ride Winnie the Pooh, and it was a 45-minute wait, and they had a fast pass availability for 10 minutes later. So by the time we walked across the park, we could get into the fast pass line. So doing things like that and knowing that that's available, I think is – It's a huge saver, especially in those middle hours where you know it's going to be busy. So if you get there early, you go to your two or three, you know, big ticket rides that you want to hit right off the bat, and then start rolling fast passes like that. I think you can get a lot accomplished by early afternoon.
Sure, and that one on Jungle Cruise is especially nice because you grab that first Fast Pass, you ride Jungle Cruise, and then as soon as you get off Jungle Cruise, the Fast Pass Plus kiosk is right there, right. So you can grab another one.
Yeah, and you could theoretically do that, depending on the time of year, because I think in time of year and time of day, you Fast Pass Jungle Cruise, come out, Fast Pass Pirates, go ride Pirates, come back through, Fast Pass something else, and then walk across the park, all out of that one kiosk.
Sure. All right. Well, Jeff is probably our most experienced day tripper to Walt Disney World at this point, having relocated to Orlando not too long ago, but long enough ago that he's made a number of those standalone trips to the park. So, Jeff, what are some of your favorite tricks for managing overall? I'm going to get into some sort of individual park touring suggestions soon, but just kind of big picture wise, what are some strategies to help make sure you're able to enjoy the parks when when you're just showing up for the day and you don't have that advanced planning done.
I think the most important thing that you can do is if you've got a mobile phone and you're just on the way to the park or walking in, get on My Disney Experience. I actually use the website instead of the app because I find it works a little bit faster. And see what fast passes are available and get what you can before the crowds get in the park. Because even if you show up for the day, as long as you're ahead of the people who don't have access to the app and don't have the profiles and are just using the kiosks, you're one step ahead of them and you've got that much of a better chance of getting some things that you want. And
yeah, that's a great point. You know, using that, and I've had a similar experience of being able to show up at Magic Kingdom, you know, in the morning, not having any FastPass Plus reservations at all, but being able to just hop on my phone, you know, standing there in the park before the big rush gets there at around 11 o'clock and be able to get prime FastPasses set, you know, for those first three.
Right. And the other big thing, which I know this show is about FastPass Plus, but you're trying to maximize your time in the park because you haven't done any advanced planning. Pick up at the Times Guide and find out the hours of the dining establishments. Because if you're there on a day trip, you're probably not doing a table service. You're going to be doing quick service. So you want to be looking for which quick services are open that aren't open all the time. Because everybody's going to be going to be our guest. And sure, you can stand in line at 10 o'clock in the morning for lunch. but you could also walk right up to Tortuga Tavern or the Friar's Nook and get something that isn't as good immediately.
So, right, or you can, you know, get in a medium-ish line at Sleepy Hollow and get my favorite quick service meal in all of Walt Disney World. Or, you know,
Columbia
Harbor
hungry,
House just around the corner, which also can have odd hours sometimes.
Right. But that's your first two things I always tell people is look at the app and see what fast passes you want to get. And that's a good time to see what table service is available if you want to do that. But if you're doing quick service, I like to look for the places that nobody goes to because I'm maximizing my time. I don't want to wait in line for food. I want to wait in line for an attraction.
Sure, sure. And another thing, and I think you kind of mentioned it a little bit when you talk about Times Guides, is that I think day trips sometimes are great chances to experience the you know, shows and things that you might otherwise skip because, you know, I think sometimes we get into this kind of go, go, go mentality where we want to go from attraction to attraction and some really great shows kind of, you know, fall by the wayside. So I know that for example, for me, this last trip, this Dad's Convention trip, you know, I got a chance finally to see Finding Nemo the musical because we weren't really tied to a particular FastPass schedule. And I'm really glad we got to see it because I had a lot of fun. It was a great show. And, you know, I'll be able to still try and convince the rest of my family to come see it. Yeah, everybody but my son is on board. But, you know, I've got some more ammo to sell him on it now.
And what's more than just seeing the shows in those time periods, you can take advantage of the high crowds to see some things that you wouldn't have seen that are attractions, like Tom Sawyer's Island or the Treehouse or wandering through the pavilions in Epcot that most of us just fly by when we're going from boat ride to non-existent boat ride. And you can spend a lot of time just soaking in all the details that are around the parks. And go ahead.
Sorry. One of my go-tos, you know, your July, your sweating buckets. You know, one of my go-tos are things like Carousel of Progress. You know, you just walk right in Hall of Presidents, things like that, it's sometimes an underappreciated attraction, but it is a nice place to cool down. You can relax a little bit and enjoy a good attraction. I love Carousel of Progress, for instance.
Right. And if lines are really horrid, you can do things like ride the people mover or the railroad multiple times. And if there's no line for the people mover, they'll just let you stay on. And the railroad, they never check. And if you need a way to fill the time during the day and you can't get on anything else, you've always got those two as standbys.
Yeah, and another thing I think that day people need to manage is their expectations. You know,
exactly.
You're not going to be able to see Elsa go on Space Mountain, do Splash in Big Thunder in an hour. You know, it's just not going to happen. So you need to manage your expectations, and you need to figure out what your priorities are and do those and be happy with that.
Right. If you want to get on the mountains, or if Elsa is your number one thing for the day, that's fine. But you've just got to be willing to realize you're sacrificing the time of doing everything to get that accomplished.
Yeah, and that I think is probably going to lead us in nicely to talking specifically about Magic Kingdom, because I think that's where we've been focusing so far. And to be honest, that seems to be the most common destination for people taking that, you know, one-day stop at Walt Disney World. So we've covered, I think, a few of the really, you know, good tips. We've talked about rolling FastPass Plus and taking advantage of, you know, making sure you make that fourth FastPass reservation. We've talked about getting there early and making those reservations on the app as you get going. And even a little bit about some specific attractions, but I'd like to expand on that a little bit and maybe talk about ways that you can, you know, set some priorities and some planning suggestions for making the most out of that day in the Magic Kingdom. So, David, you got us rolling with the suggestion on the fourth Fast Pass. Any other good, you know, touring suggestions for Magic Kingdom on a day trip like that?
Well, I think the first thing you need to figure out is what you're focusing on for the first 2 hours. Okay, so you get to the park. Depending on, you know, every family's different. So, like mine, if we were going for a day, I'd still have to go stand in line for Anna and Elsa. So, just because I have a 7-year-old daughter, it would have to happen. So, like
you have my sympathies.
Thank you. Well, normally I fast pass it at 9 o'clock, 60 days out on the day that we're there, and then we're done. You know, we get it out of the way. It worked last time. We'll see if it works this next trip. But, you know, so if we're there, and unless I can talk my daughter out of it, my first hour is basically gone, because half an hour, 40-minute wait for Anna and Elsa, 10-minute, you know, interaction, whatever, you're out there. But if you're – that aside, if your focus is on the mountains – choose what you want to do early. I would think, and guys back me up, I think Space Mountain you got to do early, because you can fast pass. You can probably still find fast passes for Splash later in the day if you really wanted to. I know they were available in August when we were there. I think 2 o'clock I made one for like 10 o'clock. We never used it, but at any rate, I think you have to focus on that. And then as you're coming into the park, know you're going to space first, so make those first three for whatever you can fill in that you want to do. So one of the two mountains, maybe grab one for Pirates, and I don't know, maybe Jungle Cruise, stay on that side of the park, and then get into that rolling fourth fast pass.
Sure.
I don't know anyone else want to kick in. That was kind of pretty specific. I don't know if we wanted to go that specific.
That's all useful stuff. CJ, any other good Magic Kingdom suggestions for touring priorities and strategies?
Well, first, avoid Elsa and Anna. But what I usually do is my daughter's a coaster junkie. So we go straight from the rope drop to Space Mountain, do that, and then head over to Big Thunder and Splash. And usually early in the day, there's virtually no wait. Even busy times, it might be a small wait, but you can do you can knock out those three rides in quick order, and then we just go from there. Whatever we wanted to do, if Jungle Cruise is not busy, we do that, or you know, head over to whatever else we want to do. But Space, then Splash, and Big Thunder is usually our go-to daytime strategy without any sort of fast passes.
So how do you incorporate Seven Dwarfs Mine Train into that?
You don't.
Okay.
That was exactly the question I was going to ask.
Yeah.
Well, all right. And now you would substitute Seven Dwarfs for Space.
Okay. Does that actually draw away from Space? So if you go to Seven Dwarfs first and then wrap around to Space and then go across the park?
The only problem is that a lot of people would have filled in before then, and Big Thunder and Splash would start to accumulate lines. But right. So yeah, you're right. Space or what I would do now is Space or Seven Dwarfs, and then head over right over to Big Thunder and Splash.
I'd actually lean more towards if you want to do Mine Train. It's almost if you. It seems like Mine Train is the first thing you ride in the park, or you're not going to do it if you don't have Fast Pass. I have very rarely been able to snag a Fast Pass day of for Mine Train unless it's a very small party. Granted, I've anecdotally seen that sometimes there are some that open up at midnight that day, but. I think if you have any hope of doing Anna Elster or Mine Train, you just follow the crowd back, which I think they're still walking Anna and Elsa's herd back to Fantasyland. And once you get back there, the crowd sort of splits. You have the people who are running in to see the Frozen Sisters, and the other group is all going to queue up in the Mine Train. And I think it would be actually easier to get onto Space than it would be Mine Train at this point, until the hype calms down a little bit.
That makes sense. You know, Mine Train, like Elsa, it's ridiculous waits. But, you know, you do it if the kid wants to do it.
Right. And right now, what I keep seeing is that you can still get a fast pass for Space and Splash at some point during the day. It may not be early in the day, but you can still get them. Mine Train is not just very rarely available. So if you want to do all of the mountains, and if you include one of the mountains as being the Mine Train, I would make that your number one priority.
Yeah, I think you kind of have to at this point. It's, you know, it's the hot new thing, if nothing else. And it's in that hot spot, right, where, you know, Winnie the Pooh used, or where Dumbo used to be. And we know that spot people flock to. I mean, it's in, I don't know any other way to put it, but, you know, we learned that lesson when they moved Dumbo. It's not the attraction. That's part of it. You know, it attracts the right age group, but that particular location right past the castle is going to be a hot spot. And right now that's a hot new attraction on top of being in the prime real estate. You know, you just got to make that choice up front.
Exactly. And if you can get a fast pass for Mine Train, you're on the ride and out of there in 3 minutes or so. But if you can't, that line builds up in a hurry, and the Mine Train line is much worse than some of the things that used to be huge bottlenecks like Pan and Space and Splash.
Yeah. We did have one question that kind of popped up in the chat room here that I wanted to get some, you know, feedback on, because I think it's a reasonable question. You know, a lot of people are coming in, and if they don't have a lot of fast passes set up in advance and they don't have a detailed plan ready to go, their gut instinct is we're going to go in and we're just going to kind of follow around. You know, we're either going to go clockwise or counterclockwise, and we're just going to work our way through the park. You know, is that something at this point that is manageable at all? And if it is, you know, is the sort of, you know, old idea that going counterclockwise, you know, everybody naturally goes right, so if you go left, the crowds won't be as bad. Is that still a valid possibility?
Well, go ahead. I've noticed a lot that, you know, everybody heads towards Tomorrowland, and if you go to Adventureland and you go to, like I said, Splash and Big Thunder, that the crowds eventually get over there. But that's not like the first place that they go. I've walked through Frontierland at Rope Drop when there's absolutely no one around, and you could just basically walk out, stuff like that. So I think that's a valid point. If you go left and you're willing to give up waiting for space or Seven Dwarfs or Elsa, you know, that's a valid strategy.
David, any comment?
Yes. Sorry. I do. I just got a call where my daughter's under delay tomorrow already. Yay, blizzard in the Northeast. Woohoo. Anyway, sorry. That's what happens on a live show.
My daughter's on a bus going from a ski trip back to school, so I'm, you know, I may have to hang up and go, what the hell? What the heck happened?
Oh, man. All right, I'm sorry. I don't think you can just go counterclockwise or clockwise anymore. I don't think it's a possibility, because you're gonna be okay early. Like, if you go opposite the traffic, which we always did and I think is an okay plan to do, but as soon as you get into Fantasyland, you're up a crick, because you're gonna spend a ton of time at Pan, you're gonna spend more time than you need to at Small World, you're gonna spend a heck of a lot of time if you get into either Seven Dwarfs Mine Train or Anna and Elsa, and you're not even halfway around the park, and then you get into the bottleneck like poo, and then you keep going, and now you're done, really. I mean, that's 3 or 4 o'clock, you'd think. I don't know. Someone do the math. Because if you go straight left, you'd hit Jungle Cruise Pirates, the Two Mountains, Haunted Mansion. What am I skipping in there? Hall of Presidents. We're going to skip that because it's boring in a half an hour. But I don't know. You kind of with me? You can't just – if you don't have fast passes set up, you can't just go counterclockwise and expect to get everything in.
Well, I think that goes back to managing your expectations.
Right. I agree. But
– I mean, it's – especially with the crowd levels these days, unless you follow strictly to a good touring plan – you're not going to ride everything in the park. So you just learn to pick and choose what you want to hit. Now, I've gotten to the point where I'm not typically going to spend a lot of time in Fantasyland. But if I was, I'd be headed back there first, not because of the lines at Space Mountain, but because of the attraction capacity. Because everything in Fantasyland, the kids want to stay there all day, and they're slow loading.
Yeah, it also goes back to the people you're with. You know, when my daughter was younger, we would go straight to Fantasyland. You know, we would do Peter Pan. We would do Snow White, which obviously is no longer there. And we would do Fantasyland first. Now that she's a little older and you know, when I'm going by myself, you know, I do more things like Space and Big Thunder and Splash and, you know, things like that. So a lot depends on, you know, who you're with.
Yeah, I mean, that's a really good point. But I think I would say that while the old strategy of, you know, go left and nobody will be there, it's probably still valid that that's true. I think that we now have a situation where the worst of the queue lines are probably weighted to the to the right side, to the counterclockwise side of the park. And if you don't take advantage of the fact that you're there early and attack that right side, you know, when you first get there, when you have an advantage, then that disadvantage of going the other direction just builds up all day.
Yeah, that's exactly true.
It multiplies it.
Right,
you know,
exactly.
It's great that you get probably, you know, you can clear out the left side of the park, but when you get to the meat of it, you're just bogged down.
Every wait is going to be 60 minutes or more.
Yeah.
So, you know, if you're doing it without fast passes. So, you know, if it's very important to you, if maybe you've got somebody with mobility issues or you've got a reason that you need to minimize the crisscrossing of the park, you know, if you've got to choose, I would say go right and, you know, probably start in Fantasyland, loop back through Tomorrowland and work from there. I don't know. Jeff, you going to argue with me on that, or does that make sense to you too?
It makes sense to me. The one downside to it is that I think you have the least number of air conditioned queues on the left side of the park. So if you're in the middle of the day, I would much rather be standing in a line for Space Mountain in the dark where it's air conditioned than would be waiting in the swelter of the Jungle Cruise or Big Thunder Mountain.
Interesting point. I hadn't thought about that.
But we
spent a lot of time talking about Magic Kingdom. I know we've got at least one guy here in the chat room who is taking that one-day trip, you know, a side trip from a trip in Florida to Walt Disney World, and they're planning on spending their day in Epcot. So why don't we talk about ways that you can, you know, use and I think in Epcot the strategies are especially important because I think we've all talked about this before. There are really a limited number of attractions that it's really worth using FastPass for. So how do you leverage the FastPasses you can get, and how do you take advantage, and how do you, you know, best experience Epcot when you don't have that advance opportunity to set things up? Jeff, I know you spent a lot of time at Epcot, so why don't you get us rolling on your suggestions for, you know, the best ways to really enjoy Epcot when you're in a situation that you don't have a detailed advance plan?
Well, right now it's still... You're either going to Soarin or Test Track, one or the other, for your first thing, and do it as soon as park opens. Those are consistently the rides that suck up the most traffic at Epcot. Now, Nemo is a large loader, but you can still get on with minimal weight later in the day. In fact, with a lot of the Future World attractions, either before 11 or once you get closer to 5, 6, 7, the lines aren't that bad. The one thing that, if you're going to Epcot for the day, don't start at Spaceship Earth. I mean, we've all seen this.
But it's right there.
Yes, and it's big and it's shiny.
It's a big golf ball.
But you come back at 8 o'clock and you can walk right on it. Why spend 80 minutes waiting in line for a thrilling slow movie?
It's a big golf ball.
I know, and there used to be a big golf club to go with it, too.
Oh, God, that's great.
All right. Well, that's a really good point. And you know, I think that one of the things about Epcot that we forget sometimes as we're complaining about the fact that, you know, the only attractions that really need Fast Pass are the two that they separate, right? The Test Track and Soarin'. That also means that even though the standby lines have gotten longer in the FastPass Plus era for things like Figment and maybe to a lesser extent, universe of energy, spaceship Earth, those attractions have always had, you know, low lines, not just because, you know, people often bypass them, but also because they're fast-loading attractions, and they eat people pretty quickly. So even the posted waits, I don't think I've ever stood in a line for Imagination as long as the posted wait. It just never takes that long because it is a continuous loading attraction and it moves pretty quick. So I think you do have an opportunity on those Future World Dark Rides to get through queues pretty quickly, especially early in the day. I would say that if you're making FastPass Plus reservations in Epcot, I think you have to use a different strategy. I think that the whole idea of, you know, make all your reservations early and so you can get extras is kind of wasted in Epcot because there aren't really extras you're going to want. So I would actually make my either Test Track or Soarin' reservation a little later in the day and use that time early to take in, you know, those other Future World attractions. And that way you can spend your later part of the day just enjoying the World Showcase stuff at your own pace.
I think the most painful part about Epcot right now is when you actually have to stand in line for Figment. Because no matter how long you wait, it's not going to be worth it for that attraction. There is no good that can come of it. So it's you're going in there and you're realizing that you're doing it because it's there. But in fact, I would. If I was given the option between waiting in line for Figment and walking through the Vision House again, I'd probably walk through the Vision House again.
All right, CJ, what are your tips for Epcot?
If I'm going on Soarin', and I'm not a big fan of Soarin', but if that's the one thing that I want to do is I get there first. And from there, I go to Test Track, and if it's possible in your group, I do the single rider line at Test Track. You can get in there ridiculously quicker than if you wait as a group. And then from there, Mission Space, which is the best ride at Disney World. And there's no wait, yeah. Ever.
Yeah, that's true. And especially if you're willing to ride Orange, you know, there's never a wait for Orange. Sometimes there's a little bit of a wait for Green on Mission Space.
Yeah, I'm definitely Orange all the way.
No, I mean, I think that's a good point. And again, that single rider line at Test Track is probably one of the best single rider lines at Walt Disney World because you've got a ride vehicle that seats six. And so, it gets used more often because you've got lots of groups of four and they'll fill it from the single rider line.
Yeah, it's usually very quick. And, so you sit next to somebody that's a stranger, but it's the same experience. I do that quite a bit.
Yeah. All right. So how about you, David? What are some of your Epcot tips?
Well, I think I agree with pretty much what everyone has said so far. The one thing I know, FastPass Plus in Epcot gets knocked a lot. But when you have small kids, it is very nice now that the character spot is not in the top tier anymore. So you can get a Soarin' or Test Track, and then you can get the character spot if your kids want to go meet those three. It cuts down, because by the time you get in, do Soarin' or do whatever you have a fast pass for, go stand in line for the other one. And if you were to go there, you're probably at a 30 to 40 minute wait just to meet characters. And with the fast pass, it's under 10 for sure. I know we did it two, maybe three times last time we were there. I know that's a lot, but my son likes Mickey. So it happens. But using that as a second fast pass and then third, I don't know. I don't know, maybe Nemo if you're going to make them, just because it's right there. Otherwise, I think it's kind of – and I don't know if we've just – it's really knock everything out that you can in Future World and then just stroll at your leisure and make sure you stop and get beer and a pretzel in Germany. And more beer wherever else. So, but yeah, I don't know. I think I agree with everyone. You fast pass Soren before you fast pass Test Track, because if you're willing to split up your group, you can use the single rider line to your advantage. So
yeah. Okay, so I think that we've pretty much covered Epcot. You know, one of the nice things about Epcot is that for those of us who enjoy World Showcase, you know, it really is designed to be enjoyed at your own pace, and the whether or not you've got fast passes in advance and all of that aren't so important. I will say, maybe we'll do a quick just around the horn here on, you know, we all know that there's great food in Epcot, and I think that extends to me, I think that extends to a lot of the counter service options in addition to the table service. So let's just assume that table service isn't available. What are your favorite counter service destinations in Epcot, favorite place to grab something to eat, you know, when it's busy, you don't have reservations, anything like that. And CJ, why don't you start us off?
I just walk up to Les Celliers and they immediately see me. My name's Bob Iger, by the way. no, actually, I like the Mexican Pavilion. It's a nice, reasonably priced meal. And, you know, it gets ridiculously crowded sometimes, but it's not that bad. And I would avoid the American Pavilion.
That's kind of good advice in general for their food, but okay. So, David, how about you? What would you suggest for people looking for a good counter service option in World Showcase or anywhere in Epcot, really?
Fish and chips and a harp in England, or a bass, whichever. But walking up to what is it, Yorkshire Fish Shop? Is that right? Is that
yep.
correct?
Yep.
Yeah. It's right there. I don't think I've ever seen a line there. Ever, and it's deep fried food, and there's a beer stand within like 12 or 15 yards, so it might be further than that, but
be prepared to defend your food.
Well, yeah, but if you're eating outside, this you have to do anyways, right?
I'm just saying.
Talking about
the seagulls really like the fish and chips.
That's, yeah, all right, okay. You got me there. Or you could just go get a pretzel and beer in Germany. So that one's for Paul, because that's the only thing he's written in the chat for the last 10 minutes since we started on Epcot.
All right, so Jeff, how about you?
I'd say at least 9 times out of 10, I end up at Sunshine Seasons.
All right.
Just, yeah.
Yeah. They've got the best selection of food. And it's not always – like, I love fried food, but I'm not supposed to eat it as often as I do. I don't have to worry about that in Sunshine Seasons. Now, if I'm World Showcase, I know this is not everybody's favorite thing, but I – love Tangerine Cafe in Morocco.
No! He stole it.
That place is such a good deal, and they will give you refills and drinks if you ask those people. You can't get
my
that.
Absolute favorite counter service in all of Epcot.
Yes. It's just this hidden thing. Everybody avoids it because Moroccan food is ethnic. But I can eat there over and over. The one place that I will not eat in Epcot is Lotus Blossom Cafe in China. I have never had crunchy fried rice until I went there. I'm not
texture.
Paying
it's just texture.
You sure it was rice?
I'm not sure it was right. I've had better food at Panda Express. Oh my gosh. Don't do it. Save yourself.
Yeah, I will agree there. And with everything Jeff just said, absolutely love the Tangerine Cafe. You know, I'm a dyed-in-the-wool carnivore. Any of you who have eaten with me at Ohana or any of those other places understand that. They've seen it. But Tangerine Cafe, I'll go and order the vegetarian platter because it's terrific, and it's got all the things I like on it. So, you know, I'll order it anyway. And if I really, you know, need protein, the shawarma platters are good too. But that vegetarian platter is my favorite plate of food in Epcot, I think, at this point.
Okay. You have to tell me what's on the vegetarian platter.
Falafel, I never remember the names of these things. The falafel, a couple of the salads, marinated olives, what else is on there? Couscous is on there, I think. Mm-hmm. It's like four or five different, you know, kind of little, Middle Eastern sides, you know, that are served on a regular basis, and it's all good stuff.
It may be my daughter's favorite place now.
Oh yeah, it's really good, really, and it's a really big serving. I mean, lots mm-hmm. of food.
And if you do need breakfast food in Epcot, this is one of these things I've discovered, and it's if you go to Sunshine Seasons, they have this thing called croissant berry pudding. And it is like eating a stick of butter. It is awesome.
I was just going to say it's dangerously good.
It's what is it, like $3? And it fills you up. It's a great breakfast deal.
Yeah, it really is.
If you haven't eaten breakfast, go there and pick up a tub of that, and you're good to go for several hours.
A tub of that?
They serve it in this big cup.
That's awesome. Really, it's a tub?
It feels like a tub once you start eating it.
That's fantastic. That's awesome.
Really why have I never heard of this?
I don't know, but you would love it.
That's awesome.
Yeah, you really would. It's very good.
Hey, just as an update, veggie platter is hummus, tabbouleh, lentils, falafel, and marinated olives with some bread.
There you go.
The wonders of the internet.
It's my, pita,
my
though.
My kid is
going
to want to live there.
All right. So I think we've done a good job covering Epcot. I want to try and talk about Hollywood Studios here, and it's getting to be harder, right, to tour Hollywood Studios with all this construction, a lot of things going down. I mean, you know, Jeff, you're probably in the area more than the rest of us are, but, you know, are there more than half a dozen attractions still operating right now in Hollywood Studios?
Well, I saw at one point last week, the only thing that was operating was Star Tours because Toy Story was down, Rock and Roller Coaster was down, and Tower of Terror was down.
Yeah, that was a bad day.
And Star Tours had a 7-hour wait.
I had to mute myself because I was laughing so hard.
Seriously?
You know, but here's the thing. For those of us with kids, or even people with really small kids, if you've got one day, and especially if you're going to park hop and try and take in more than one thing, you know, sometimes Hollywood Studios is a necessity because for my kids, if we only had one day at Walt Disney World, they would insist on going to Hollywood Studios so that we could do Training Academy. Right, they love Jedi Training Academy, and
yep.
So you know that would have to be our first stop. Period, no questions about it. For others who have kids who love Disney Junior, you know, getting there to see that Disney Junior show, whether any other attractions are operating or not, you know, they've got to have it. So you know, if you're going to spend that day or part of that day at Hollywood Studios, and you're not going to have FastPass Plus, probably for you know Toy Story Mania, for example. You know, what do you do in Hollywood Studios? How do you prioritize so that you can take advantage of the things that are there and are operating?
Well, especially if you're doing Jedi Training Academy, I don't know how you ride Toy Story Mania at all. Really, without a 90-minute yep. wait.
I'm a pro. We've done it over and over again.
look at you. Without a fast pass?
Usually once with, once without.
Okay.
But
are you going to enlighten us, or is it your secret?
Okay, well, so our usual strategy, if we can get the fast pass, right? I mean, if we've got an opportunity to get a fast pass, what we do is in the Fast Pass Plus era, right? You can make a Fast Pass Plus later in the day, or if you're going to ride standby, the trick is that you split up. And the one parent takes the two kids to sign up for Training Academy. The other parent goes the other way and sort of bird dogs the line at Toy Story Mania. And you communicate back and forth, depending on the length of the line, to tell the parent who is with the kids at Training Academy which show to sign up for. And so then they come immediately from signing up for Training Academy back around to Toy Story Mania, and you hop on the line.
And it's at, like, what, 45 minutes at that point, or what?
Usually it's posted at around 35 to 40, and you're usually on faster.
Okay. That makes sense.
Which leaves us just enough time to get back around and get the kids to their check-in for Training Academy. But, you know, I mean, so that works for us to get two attractions in, but my daughter loves Tower of Terror, you know, Rock and Roller Coaster still most days is running. So any brilliant suggestions for people on how to take advantage of these, you know, when they've got a compressed amount of time to deal with it?
Well, are either of those two available FastPass Plus at some point during the day?
Okay, so
if you're day tripping, just for majority of the year, so I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I think probably.
Yeah, you can probably get into either of those still during the day. Toy Story is going to be the bigger problem,
right?
Okay.
Yeah, I think it's going to be pretty difficult to get a fast pass for Toy Story day of, if not impossible.
Yeah, and I would say that the two best times to catch Toy Story, if you're not fast passing it, is either very first thing or the last thing you do before you go to get in line for Fantasmic, assuming you're going to go see Fantasmic, right? Because the folks with younger kids who like to ride it are the ones who are going to start wearing out at that point, and they're going to start leaving the park. And so that line, I think, gets a little better, you know, as you get closer to closing time / Fantasmic. And if you're going to skip Fantasmic, you know, riding it, you know, while the majority of the park is getting in line for Fantasmic is a great opportunity.
Now, do you think there's any need for FastPass for any shows in the studios?
I don't.
I don't either.
No.
Besides Anna and Elsa, which isn't technically a FastPass, it's just you go get in line and get a FastPass.
Yeah.
Well, now the sing along is a regular fast pass now.
Is it? Okay.
Yeah, they've upgraded to a regular fast pass, and it's not so much that you need it to get in, but it's one way to make sure you're not stuck sitting in the bleachers, which is not necessarily a bad thing. But there's a chunk of the seats that are back in the bleachers that have a post in the way.
You mean like the seat that I was sitting in the last time I saw it?
That would be the one.
Yeah. Okay.
I don't know, Jeff, any thoughts on dealing with the First Time in Forever show?
Actually, now I'd actually forgotten it was still there. If that's a show you want to do, you either fast pass or get there to be part of the early standby group. Because I've seen a few times where they will start letting some of the standby people in before all the fast pass people are in.
Really? Interesting.
So get there early, and you still should be able to get a good seat. But I think that the sing-along is probably the only show that actually fills up there. Other than that, during most times of the year, there's always space in Indy. There's always space in Lights Motors. There's always space in Little Mermaid. There's always space in Beauty and the Beast. Maybe Disney Junior, they cut off the line early because they hit capacity in that room.
Yeah, but I think most shows, even that's not a problem.
Right. So if you're selecting your fast passes, unless you need to fill that third one somehow, don't use it on a show. Or if you do, have it be the earliest show possible so you can get access to that fourth fast pass earlier.
Yeah, although, you know, I haven't really tried it so much in the studios. Are you finding that there's much availability for fourth fast passes at Hollywood Studios? I mean, it just seems to me that right now there are so few attractions that are Fast Pass Plus worthy there that you'd have a hard time, you know, finding openings later in the day.
Honestly, I haven't tried because there's just not that much to do there. Right. And on top of that, I have back issues that I don't ride Rock and Roller Coaster or Tower because of them.
Right.
So
right.
That just knocks it down to maybe three things I can possibly do.
Yeah.
So, I not only have I not really had an issue beyond needing to use one or two fast passes at the studios, but I don't know anybody else that has.
Yeah.
Well, you could.
Oh, go ahead, David.
I was just going to say you can. I would make the assumption that you can get onto a Star Tours in some capacity.
Oh yeah,
at that fourth Fast Pass.
Unless it's Star Wars weekend.
Yeah, but and the only and maybe Tower. I think those two for sure. Rock and Roller Coaster would be iffy. Toy Story, that sure as heck isn't going to happen by that point in the day. And anything else, you really don't need it. I mean, unless you want to try to pull the quote-unquote rolling fast pass from Magic Kingdom on, like, Great Movie Ride. What else would have, like, a 20- or 30-minute wait that you could
that's
do
open.
That with? That's open. You're exactly right.
I mean, that's really kind of the problem, it seems to me, at studios right now, is that you've either got attractions with a, you know, 10- to 15-minute wait, or you've got attractions with a 60- to 75-minute wait. You know, there's not much in between.
Right.
And
right.
If your party allows you to, doesn't Rock and Roller Coaster still have a single rider?
Rock and Roller Coaster does have single rider. Sometimes it goes really fast. It's not as efficient as the single rider line at Test Track because the cars at Rock and Roller Coaster, you know, it's in pairs. And
right.
So you don't have as many openings as you do with the sort of three and three of Test Track.
Right, but that would lead me to think that it would probably be a higher priority to get one on Tower than on Rock and Roller Coaster because at least you have the option of the single rider.
I got lapped the last time I did Rock and Roller Coaster in the single rider line.
Yeah,
I'm lucky.
Yeah.
It was
that bad?
Yeah, well, it was extra magic hours in the evening. Got there. Regular line was at 60 minutes, and that was a lie. So I jumped in the single riders line, and I stood there for 45 and saw people go on it twice.
Oh.
Back to back. Yeah.
Yep. Yeah, I've experienced similar, you know, with Rock and Roller Coaster single rider.
Yeah.
It's not nearly as good as, say, Test Track.
Well, Yeti's even better than that, and I don't...
That's very true too.
I've had luck there.
Yeah, I agree. All right. Well, real quickly, you know, for me, the studios has traditionally been a park where I've had a hard time finding an option for, you know, quick counter service food that I would enjoy. Although I feel like I found a, you know, had a good find during Diz Dad's convention, so that's kind of solved for me. Although it may be going away, but in the meantime, do people have suggestions for, you know, where people ought to go to grab something to eat in Hollywood Studios that doesn't require an advance reservation? You know, David, you have a suggestion?
I don't know. Men and Bills, maybe. Was that yours? Did I take yours?
Yeah, you did.
And it's going away.
The sausage and peppers were really good. I really enjoyed that a lot. And they've got beer there, which is always good, including, you know, microbrew beer, which was good.
Right. Well, the other thing I was gonna say was either Tune In Lounge or the Brown Derby Lounge. It wouldn't be quote unquote quick service, but if you wanted to sit down for a half an hour, you can probably walk up, get an appetizer and go from there if you wanted to. And
yeah.
A beverage. And you get out
yeah.
of the heat. That's kind of my thing. You know, what Backlot Express is really the only counter service that's inside. Is that correct?
No,
ABC Commissary, I'm sorry. Yeah.
But I would need a commissary.
Yeah.
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 How about you, yeah. CJ? What do you suggest?
Forget quick service at the MGM or Disney Hollywood Studios. I go to things like the Brown Derby. I did that. The outside area there was really nice. Good food. You can get an adult beverage if you wanted it. And the same with the Tune-In Lounge at Primetime. In fact, I ran into a couple of guys there.
That's right. Those are especially good options, by the way, if you've got your Tables in Wonderland card, because you can use your tables discount in the lounges.
Yep.
How about you, Jeff? Suggestions for something quick to eat in Hollywood Studios?
Whenever I want something good that's quick to eat in the studios, go to Epcot.
It's the same suggestion Paul just made in the chat room.
But if I'm going to stay in there, I will either go to Bill's and I get the pretzel dog, or, and I say this with the biggest hesitation, Backlot Express, not because the food's good, but because it's one of those places where you can refill your own soda as many times as you want. That's the only good thing I can think of about the place. Other than that, if I can do table service at the studios, which isn't that great, I'll do it. But I don't find that many good things to eat at the studios.
Well, is there something you can actually walk up to in the studios for lunch that is table service that you're not going to wait for an hour?
Tune-In Lounge?
Well, no, I mean, besides the bars, you're not going to get into sci-fi, because even if you have a reservation, you wait for 25 minutes there. Maybe 50s Primetime? Maybe? Mm. Like actual primetime sit down, but probably not, right?
Yeah,
probably not. No.
You're just not without any advanced preparation, and if there's nothing open on the app, and especially with the studios, check the app and see if there are any dining times available. Table service is out of the question.
Although I have gone to the Brown Derby at. Shortly after they opened, he got seated right away.
Like at 3:30, 4 o'clock, something like that.
I've actually had good experience doing walk-up at the Brown Derby.
Yeah.
Even pretty close to prime time for dinner. I think that the two table service credit deal there, you know, affects them. And I was using Tables in Wonderland, not the dining plan, so I wasn't worried about two table service credits.
And it's an underrated restaurant. It's a very good restaurant, great service. They make fantastic martinis if you're interested in, you know, something like that. But
and they have a martini flight, don't they?
I've heard it at the.
Is that Le Cellier that has the martini?
No. I think it's at the outside part, but I imagine
they'll serve it to the inside as well.
Yeah, I imagine you can.
But yeah, that's true. And you know, the other thing is that Brown Derby, although it's a two table service credit restaurant, there's some options on the menu, and we talked about this a while back when we did the, you know, dining values show. You can eat at Hollywood Studios without spending a ton of money because there are some items on the menu, you know, appetizers that are really big that'll serve as a meal for most people. You can get the appetizer size of their Cobb salad, and it very well serves one person.
I was about to suggest that the appetizer Cobb salad, you know, great lunch.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, so I think we've talked about Hollywood Studios enough, and I don't want to leave Animal Kingdom out of the discussion. So let's talk a little bit about Animal Kingdom. And Nate in the chat room was talking earlier about the fact that in a lot of ways, Animal Kingdom is a park that, you know, with very little exception, doesn't so much need FastPass much. It's sort of built into the way the park works, right? It's a more laid-back park. It's a kind of stroll-around, hang-out kind of park. So how do you maximize that experience when you're making a day trip? And I think in some ways, Animal Kingdom becomes almost a really attractive park, and a good alternative to the Magic Kingdom for a one-day visit without a lot of advanced planning, just because of the way the park works. David, how would you approach Animal Kingdom without a lot of advanced planning?
Get there early. Probably still going to be able to get a fast pass for Yeti at some point in the day, right? I don't know. I think you do the safari first, because you're going to get the most action out of the animals at that point, and then go clockwise from there. Do Yeti, do dinosaur if that floats your fancy, and then hit the shows and everything else. Basically make two laps. Hit the Dawa bar. Is it open that early? Is it open at 8?
I think it opens at 11.
Oh, okay. So you hit it on the second round. But I mean, you really have three things you want to hit off the bat that are going to be, you know, pains in the butt if you really want to do them. Dinosaur, Yeti, and the safari. I would do the safari first. Just like I said, the earlier you do it, the more action you get out of the animals, I think, at least when I go in the summer. We've always had good luck that way. And if we ride it again later in the day, it's not as – the animals aren't as active. Then Yeti, you'll still be okay time-wise. Then Dinosaur. And then do your secondary attractions or your character meets or your walk through the jungle treks. Or then go get soaked at Cali River Rapids and go home. And you're done at 11.
Any other thoughts, CJ?
Yeah, that's pretty much it. You know, there's, you know, three rides that we consistently do at Animal Kingdom. I usually do Everest first, then Safari, because there's not a long delay there. And then on the way out at 10:30, we do Dinosaur. But it's about to change.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. There's a lot going on. Okay, so Jeff, how about you? Any other thoughts?
This is another one where you want to get the times guide, because if you want to see the shows and Lion King is shown throughout the day, Nemo is harder to get into because there are fewer performances, and it's, what, 45 minutes?
Yeah.
And Flights of Wonder, if you want to work all those three in, figure out which shows you want to go to and try to work the Safari and Everest around them.
Yeah, that's a really good point. You know, Animal Kingdom is a show-heavy park because they're good quality shows, so you want to see them.
It's got the best show on property, which is Flights of Wonder.
I was going to say Lion King. But,
yeah, and the problem is, as Darcy was saying, is that the show schedule, frankly, is really awful.
It's horrible.
It's not staggered well to allow you relatively readily to go from show to show and, you know, catch both of them or all three of them.
So the biggest – I think it's easier to fit Everest in, especially with a single rider line, than it is to fit the Safari in. But I would say – for the first attraction of the morning, do Safari before any of the shows start. And then if you can slip in Everest while you're walking between the shows, great.
Yeah, you can head to Nemo, which is near there. So yeah, and that is true though. Everest has a great single rider line.
That thing moves fast.
Yeah.
And I think that's just an example of cast members who, you know how to manage their line and are really good about it. Okay, so I think that the consensus is you need to do the safari sometime in the morning, either right away or maybe after Everest, depending on what your tolerance for, you know, walking back to Asia and then coming back is. I think that, frankly, I think that moving the Festival of the Lion King Theater helped, right? It's a good thing because it's now more sort of integrated into the other places where you're likely to spend more time at Animal Kingdom. Instead of having to walk all the way, you know, out and around to Camp Minnie Mickey. And so start with your Times Guide, work in the Safari early in the day, and leverage the Everest single rider line if you can. I have yet to experience a wait at Dinosaur more than 30 minutes. I don't think I've ever experienced it more than 30 minutes. And if it's more than 30 minutes when you get there, you know, go do something else for 10 minutes and come back because it'll be less. I don't know. I mean, did anybody see?
No, that's a long wait. You know, if I spend 15 minutes in Dinosaur, I'm flummoxed.
Yeah.
I kind of wonder if you have a high wait in Dinosaur because Nemo just bled out.
Well, exactly. I mean, that's what I'm saying. I think you can time it out, right? I mean, that's a great time to go grab a beer or something, you know, if you need to kill a little time and let the line dissipate. So all those things are good. I think we've given people an outline for how to handle Animal Kingdom because I don't think it's as difficult at Animal Kingdom, aside from the difficulty that you always have in dealing with the showtime problem. So aside from that, where are some places where somebody can grab a quick meal at Animal Kingdom? Because you've got, you know, limited table service opportunities at all anyway, and because of that, they book up early, especially the character meal for breakfast and lunch at Tusker House, and it sounds like that's going to become characters breakfast, lunch, and dinner very shortly. So what suggestions do we have for people for a quick place to grab something to eat in Animal Kingdom?
Well, I think you've got a big problem right now because Flame Tree's under refurbishment.
Yeah, that pains me.
Interestingly, they are making some of the Flame Tree food available around Flame Tree. It's sort of odd.
But it's not Flame Tree, you know. That is my favorite quick service place in all of Disney. You know, you go, you get your meal, and then you go down the steps and be by the water and see they have a little dining area, had a little dining area set up.
The dining area is still there, but you can't see much because the construction walls are up around it.
Oh, no, you can't. It's done.
So Jeff, any thoughts, you know, with Flame Tree not available, what's your next go-to?
Probably Yak and Yeti. And even then, it's Disney does not do Asian well. And the only thing that I can say is consistently tolerable there would be the honey chicken for the quick service.
Okay.
Table service is great, and I've really not had an issue walking up and getting a table there or getting a last-minute reservation. I don't know if that's anybody else's experience, but I love going there for table service.
Yeah, I've actually had similar experience at Yak and Yeti with table service. I think that they have the same issue to maybe a little bit lesser extent that Rainforest Cafe and T-Rex have, which is that because they're not a Disney-owned restaurant, they don't release all of their advanced dining reservation slots to Disney. They're owned by Landry's, and they hold some of them back.
Well, another issue is that
number one, it's always worth it. Go ahead and try and give them a call direct, maybe the day before, and see if you can get a reservation directly with the restaurant. And even if you can't, you know, the walk-up wait wasn't terrible. It was pretty manageable. The one thing to remember, though, is that Yak and Yeti, it's not a Disney restaurant, so they're not going to take your Tables in Wonderland card, for example. But they do, if I remember right, have an annual pass holder discount. It's just not as much as the Tables discount.
I think they also do a DVC discount.
Yeah, it's probably the same 10% that they do for pass holders.
Yeah.
The other issue with Yak and Yeti is it's, unless you know that it's there, you may, might just walk by it and not realize it's a restaurant.
Well, that's true.
Because it, it is off the path just a little bit, and there's nothing outside it that says food right in front of it.
Well, and it's one of those examples of the theming being so good, it's almost too good.
Right.
Because now it does just blend into the background of theming.
Now, if your goal is to get food quickly, I don't know if I've ever seen a long line at Pizza Fari. I've only been in there a few times, but every time I've been in there, the place has been completely empty.
There's a reason for that.
I know there's a reason for it, but if your goal is to just get food, that's there.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not a huge fan of most of Pizza Fari's food.
No.
Their salads are decent, probably because they're probably not made there, but they're pretty good. And actually, Terry and I had breakfast there during Diz Dad's convention, and the breakfast, you know, bounty platter that they had was perfectly good, you know, tasty. And Nate said he liked their Italian sandwich. So, you know, there are some individual menu items that aren't bad. And as has been mentioned, they do have good capacity there, right? They're able to handle a lot of people. And there's plenty of space for people to sit after they order. Probably the reason that a chunk of it is getting converted to a table service restaurant. So, all right. Well, anybody else have any last thoughts about Animal Kingdom?
I just want to second the, or third, I guess, the walk up to Yak and Yeti table service. Because if you go right at 11 or near, you know, like right before you're leaving the park at 11 or 11:05, you can usually get in pretty darn quickly. They're not too busy. So that's it. With Flame Tree down, it's kind of to pull a Paul here, get on a bus, go to Epcot, have beer and a pretzel in Germany.
All right. Well, you know, we've touched on all four parks. I hope that we've shared some suggestions, some tips that you may find helpful when you're doing a day trip. I think we've got a lot of people who, you know, go down to Florida for other reasons and get an opportunity to take one day in the parks. And, you know, I hope we've given you some tools to make the most of those. I think what we'll do to close here is we'll go around and I'm going to ask everybody to share, you know, if you had one day to spend at Walt Disney World, where would you spend it and what would be the first thing that you would do? So, David, you're up first. You've got one day at Walt Disney World. Where are you going to go and what are you going to do?
Magic Kingdom Anna and Elsa, because I'd have to.
Okay.
I don't get to make that decision.
Right.
But it would, at this point, it would be Magic Kingdom, in all seriousness. In the past, I've always been a fan of the studios just because I'm a Tower of Terror junkie and Rock and Roller Coaster and Star Tours. So I could just go and spend a day riding those three rides. That's just me. So.
All right. How about you, CJ?
You're killing me. All right, my favorite ride in all of Disney World is Mission Space. So I would go to Mission Space and then go have lunch and hope to keep it down someplace in the World Showcase.
All right. Well, now I see you did that in the right order. So, all right. Jeff, you've got one day. Where are you heading and what are you doing?
I'm doing the exact same thing CJ is. I think Mission Space is so underrated, but I have.
Isn't really, it? I mean, come on.
I've done it four times in a row before.
No.
I haven't done it afterwards, but I've done it.
I've done twice, and that was like, okay, enough. And the kid's like, let's go on again. And I'm like, no. Have a good time.
But, yeah, I can't ever find anybody to do it. So next time you're down, let me know.
I will, seriously.
Excellent. All right. Well, I think if I've got one day, I'm going to spend it in Magic Kingdom. And I'm going to spend it in Magic Kingdom because that's a place where I think I'm going to have the best opportunity to leverage FastPass Plus and, you know, get opportunities to ride things, you know, later in the day with FastPass. And it's got the greatest density of attractions. So that's probably where I'm going to end up. And the first thing I'm going to do when I get there is going to be probably Seven Dwarfs Mine Train, because I know it gets a lot of knocks, but I had a lot of fun on it. I thought it was a good attraction, and it's new and different and fun. So I'm going to enjoy that, and then I'm going to go get a spicy chicken and waffle sandwich at the Sleepy Hollow before it closes. All right. Well, you know, you've heard our suggestions for the best ways to enjoy a single day at Walt Disney World. We'd love to hear your suggestions, too. You can send them to us at podcast@dizdads.com via email. You can visit our blog, dizdads.com. Tweet us at Dizdads Podcast on Twitter. And participate in the discussions in our forums at boards.dizdads.com. We're even on Facebook at facebook.com/DizDadsPodcast. Until next time, I've been Aaron Rittmaster with CJ Fregola.
Later, guys.
David Jewart.
Stay thirsty, my friends.
And Jeff Swearingen.
Good night. One last thing. You guys up north, you Yankees, stay safe.
Brought to you by Fairy Tale Journeys, an authorized Disney travel planner. Let us help you put together your next magical Disney vacation. Find us at fairytalejourneys.com. Let us sweat the details so you don't have to.